NBA podcast on this Toronto Raptors offseason review is Eric Kareen of the National Post, an absolutely fantastic writer. If you're not following him on Twitter, you're really missing out. It's E. Kareen on Twitter. That's E-K-O-R-E-N. Eric, I want to ask you, kind of starting off, the big debate, I think, for Raptors fans. It looked like it was going to be a disastrous offseason when they started off with the Landry Fields deal. How did that kind of evolve? And, you know, was there any way that they could have gotten out of it when Nash went to the Lakers?
Well, it evolved by them looking to upgrade the position, the swingman position. And now, I mean, anybody could say, well, paying this guy $19 million over 3 years isn't much of a positional upgrade. But independent of Steve Nash, they were legitimately interested in Landry Fields. And again, we're all free to make our own assessments there. It does seem like an overpayment, which Brian Colangelo said it was. Essentially said you overpay always in free agency, and you definitely always overpay in restricted free agency. So they liked him compared to some of the other more expensive options in free agency, and not being able to pry one of the marquee small forwards out of his current situation in a trade, they went with that. So there was a bit of an overpayment, and it was an added bonus that he was hurting New York's chances to get Steve Nash, which ultimately did not matter, of course. Would they want to get out of it? No, they didn't. They weren't interested in reneging on their offer, and they were happy when New York didn't match. Whether that will continue to be the case as this year and the next two progress, we'll see.
Wow, I mean, that's, you know, stunning to hear just based off of kind of how it was pitched. I mean, you know, I think Fields has some value. He was really hurt when he got out of the native D'Antoni system when they had to modify once Melo came. But yeah, I guess if you like your guy, you got to go get him.
Yeah,
you know, the big move obviously was Kyle Lowry. That addition, you know, really getting a steal on him. What do you think that does for the team? You know, Calderon has done a pretty good job there over the years, especially as a shooter. But Lowry just brings so much more to the table. What do you think that he's going to do for that team next year?
Well, first of all, they think that having somebody who can break guys down off the dribble for his own shot is going to help make Fields a more valuable signing. And as you alluded to, when he had D'Antoni, and basically before Carmelo got to New York, he was a much more productive player than he ended up being. So they believe that's Fields. To wrap that up, again, they will be proven right or wrong rather quickly, I suspect. With Lowry, he does bring so much more to the table. First and foremost, his defensive ability seems to mesh with what Dwayne Casey's trying to do as the head coach of the team. And he can definitely get his own shot far more than Jose Calderon's ever going to be able to. As far as Calderon is concerned, they did not use the amnesty on him as they would have if they would have gone Steve Nash, and they're more than happy to have him come into camp, even if he's not more than happy to do the same, and serve as the backup. It's not great for Calderon, who is in his last year of a contract that we should all admit was a vast overpayment, as it turns out, so he'll have to learn to deal with it until they can maybe trade him at the deadline for some more value. But Lowry is just somebody who Dwayne Casey loves, and he's somebody who fits the mold of what they want this team to be going forward.
How much is Bargnani going to benefit from the addition of Lowry, do you think?
It's tough to say. I mean, Lowry, I think, gets a bad rap. He's considered more of a shoot-first point guard, but he's actually pretty, if you look at the advanced statistics, he's pretty good as a pick-and-roll player, which is obviously where Andrea excels occasionally as well. It's tough to know with Andrea. He continues to be an enigma 7 years into his career. Was he that guy in the first 13 games last year who can be your leading scorer, your second leading scorer on a daily basis, or on a nightly basis, I should say? To say yes based on those 13 games seems insane, but Brian Colangelo has always believed in this guy as maybe not the value you get from a top pick, he believes that he can be a very good player on a very good team. I'm not convinced that Kyle Lowry is going to make a huge difference with him one way or the other, except that the less line drive attacks that are happening while the Raptors are on defense, the better off Bargnani will be as a pretty poor help defender.
Yeah, he really does struggle in that area. You know, the other big addition, I think, even before we get to Terrence Ross, I think is Jonas Valanciunas coming over after the 2011 draft, him coming over this year, had a rough time in the Olympics, didn't really get a lot of playing time. You know, there's reason to think that maybe that's not indicative of what's going to happen next year. What do the Raptors need out of Valanciunas almost immediately, you know, to kind of justify his selection as high as it was?
Yeah, for people thinking this guy's going to be rookie of the year, put down double-doubles on a nightly basis, I think it's a bit early for that to happen, for a guy who's played in Europe to come over and adjust to the more North American, the NBA style of basketball. That's asking a lot. They do need him to be a rotation player and immediately. And even when he played in the Olympics, as you said, it wasn't much. You can see what he can do. A, he's not scared, which Dwayne Casey will love and will allow him to keep on throwing him into games, even though he might be overmatched at the beginning. And on offense, he, even if he doesn't get the ball on the pick and roll, he draws so much attention because he rolls so hard to the basket. And that's maybe something that can help out Andrea Bargnani if he attracts attention defensively, that means people are going to have to sag off players on the perimeter, and that includes Bargnani. But back to Valanciunas, if he can provide, you know, that third big man and make the rotation him, Amir Johnson and Andrea Bargnani, with Ed Davis trying to earn his minutes, if he's not out of place on a nightly basis, they'll be happy.
You know, when we look at the draft, adding Terrence Ross, kind of a reach, I thought, at the time. I felt like it was a little bit early for Ross to go, and I was high on Ross. Was it mostly a matter of, I mean, it's interesting to look at the time because of how everything worked out. Yeah, what was the thinking at the time? What kind of role do the Raptors, do you think, expect Ross to play on that team?
I mean, it seemed to everybody at the time for it to be a reach. They insisted that he was their eighth player on the board, and the seven that they liked better than him went top seven. So, it certainly wasn't what anybody expected. What do they want from him? They want him to be able to knock down the outside shot. This was not a good three-point shooting team last year. And when Lowry drives, they need to have somebody for him to kick it to and make shots. And that's where they're hoping he is a bit of a change from DeMar DeRozan, who has not been able to connect on the three-pointer with any regularity in his career. Maybe you can stick this guy at the two and have him, at least at the beginning, sort of filling that, as Raptors fans would say, that Morris Peterson type role. Stand on the outside, wait for the kick, and just hit the shot and hold your own defensively. And one thing he does do is project well defensively. So again, if you can play defense, you're going to earn a lot of looks from Dwayne Casey.
Does Quincy Acey have a pretty good shot at making this club?
He'll make the team. I mean, my suspicion is that he'll be up and down from the D-League. It's just when a guy isn't playing, they'll hype it up as, well, he's pushing Ed Davis in practice every day, and that's making him better. But at some point, for each individual player, you have to get playing time. So I think he'll make the team to start, would be my guess, and then he'll make two or three trips down to the D-League, and if injuries come up, they'll have no problem trying to put him into the Reggie Evans role. Whether he can fill that or not, it remains to be seen, as is the case with most second-round draft picks. They're all sort of flyers.
You know, with Lowry, Ross, Valanciunas, and those guys, there's a lot of players coming in that are new here. And so, you know, with Dwayne Casey, I was impressed last year with the kind of consistency. I think for the first time really that I've seen in years with Toronto, they had a consistent defensive effort. With all the new personnel coming in, is there a concern that they could take a step back in that regard?
Well, you have to look at the guys who they brought in, and none of them are sort of are known for not having a good work ethic. Kyle Lowry has his issues, but they've mostly come with, I mean, the one case with Kevin McHale last year, but there's been a lot of teammate issues with him. But his sort of personality and style on the court is going to fit with Dwayne Casey. Jonas Valanciunas, you may question his readiness, but he's going to work and he's not going to be intimidated. So, I mean, it's such a tremendous jump for them to go from historically bad to middle of the pack last year. Maybe you don't see them growing beyond that, but I mean, Lowry's a great defender. Jonas Valanciunas promises to be a solid defender in the middle, although that might take time. DeMar DeRozan and Terrence Ross, I mean, it doesn't figure to be a huge defensive drop-off there, and they hope that Landry Fields is an upgrade, although a lot of statistics say he's not defensively. But I don't think there's much of a danger of them slipping defensively. Whether they can take it another step up right away, I'm skeptical as well.
Great stuff. Eric, one more last question for you. If you had to give this offseason a grade for the Raptors, what would you give it?
B minus, maybe. I mean, they solved the point guard question, and no matter what you think about Jose Calderon, he was not the answer for this team going forward. And you get one of the best contracts in the league that's not on a rookie deal in Kyle Lowry. You don't change significantly the swingman spot, and I think that's where they're still just horribly they're not deep enough there, and they don't have the top end talent, which is why I think a playoff spot might still be reaching. Of course, they still have some flexibility with Calderon's contract and the free agency coming up next year, where they could take on some a deal that one of the capped out or taxed out teams wants to shed in order to save some money. But until those moves actually happen, you can't grade flexibility. You can only grade what you actually do. So getting Kyle Lowry's a win, some of the draft, the Terrence Ross move, you know, it's hard to fall in love with that, at least immediately. And Landry Fields would seem to be an overpayment, even if he does slightly improve the roster. So I B minus is sort of where I'm at now with a willingness to be with a willingness to change my mind a few months into the season.
Great stuff. That's Eric Kurien of the National Post. Be sure to check him out on Twitter. Absolutely a fantastic follow. Eric, thanks so much for your time and enjoy your vacation, which I know starts tomorrow.
Thank you, Matt. Take care.
You know, one thing, I think that the Calderon situation is really interesting and is going to be pivotal for the Raptors going forward. I want to get kind of a sense of, you know, what the media thought in terms of whether or not Calderon was going to be okay with this new role with Lowry coming in. And that kind of leads us into our next guest. All right, next up on the CBSSports.com NBA podcast, we have Ryan Wolstad of the Toronto Sun. Ryan, how are you doing today?
Good, man. How you doing?
I'm good. So when we're looking at the Raptors, you know, they made a lot of changes this offseason, and the biggest was obviously Kyle Lowry. You know, did the Raptors really target a point guard coming into this offseason, or did Lowry just kind of fall in their laps?
I think they've been looking to upgrade at the point for quite a while, and he's a guy they've certainly had a lot of interest in. He's been a favorite of a lot of guys with the team, especially Dwayne Casey. Johnny Davis as well, working with him in Memphis. He highly recommended him. Alvin Williams is a scout with the team. He's a good buddy of his. I think he had a ton of backers in the organization, and I think they were looking at the landscape of the way the NBA is right now. It's just sort of filled with great point guards, and they needed to get in on that. And he was a guy a lot they were familiar with. They knew had a lot of talent and maybe would be available, maybe not. And they went after him. I think they definitely targeted him.
Who is going to benefit the most from Lowry coming to the Raptors?
I think Dwayne Casey. I mean, just having the guy with that sort of mentality leading the team. I mean, he's even said, no offense to Jose Calderon, but Lowry's a different personality for sure. He's, you know, he's an alpha dog who plays really hard and demands his teammates to play hard, gets after it defensively. You know, that's going to help the mindset of the team, the morale of the team, you know, having a leader like that. I think it could be good for someone like Andrea Bargnani, who obviously his biggest issue is motor, just having a guy that's going to get on him, make sure he plays the way he's capable of, because Lowry's not going to just sort of let Bargnani be. He'll be on him. So I think pretty much everyone's going to benefit from having him in Toronto, but especially, I'd say, Casey and Bargnani.
You know, considering how Landry feels, the situation surrounding his kind of being picked up by the Raptors, is it going to be a hard sell to fans? Is he facing quite a bit of pressure with that contract now, considering the circumstances surrounding his acquisition and that contract?
Yeah, I think it's going to be difficult for him to live up to that. That's the problem when you get these huge deals. It makes it twice as hard. Especially when you're sort of a low-key player like Fields, he's not someone that's flashy. He's not really going to wow you. He does a lot of the little things well. That's sort of when he's been successful in the past. Like, he's been one of those glue guys that sort of does a lot of things, and that's never going to really stand out. But I think he's a hard worker. Toronto seems to have a love affair with guys that work hard. So even though he's making a ton, if they see him giving the effort and if his shots are dropping, I think, they might be a little wary, but they'll come around on him as long as he keeps working hard and has some sort of success. If he's a disaster, then it won't be pretty.
Yeah, that is true. It will not be pretty. The acquisition of Jonas Valanciunas, I think, is big. Drafted him last year, finally getting him over this year. He struggled for the Lithuanian national team in the Olympics, but there's every indication that long term he should be a pretty productive member, especially on the defensive end. For me, I look at it as it's a huge opportunity for Bargnani to move to the four, where with his range and the size and the athleticism, that could really end up being a pretty good fit. Do you see any problems with Valanciunas and Bargnani sharing the floor?
No, I think they should be a really good combo. They should complement each other really well. The danger is expecting too much too soon. Obviously, Jonas is going to, like any young big man, not to mention a guy coming over from Europe, he's got a huge adjustment in terms of being able to stay on the floor. Fouls should be a problem. I mean, I see him as sort of he's a lot of similar to Amir Johnson, actually. You know, the fouls are going to be a problem. He's great in the pick and roll. He's a bigger version kind of right now. And in the future, he should be a lot better, but he's going to have some of the problems Amir had early on. And you couple with the fact that he's going to be learning the NBA game. Even though he's played against men, that'll be great for him. But, I mean, just all the new rules and everything, that's going to be a huge challenge. So I think people are going to need to be really patient with him. From everyone I've talked to and from what I've seen, he looks like there's no doubt he can play. And he has everything you want in a young center. But it's just whether that happens in the first couple months, it's probably unlikely. But in time, I think they project to be a really good complement. And obviously Brian Colangelo thinks that as well.
Part of it is there's a kind of a compromise between, you know, a player really excelling and then a player playing well enough to get heavy minutes and to get, you know, the commitment from the coaching staff to say, you know what, we think he can probably get there faster than we thought, so we're going to go ahead and push through minutes. So if that were to happen with Valanciunas, is there a possibility that we could be looking at Amir Johnson having his minutes drastically reduced? And if so, do you see him maybe being somebody that the Raptors could wind up moving? Because I look at this roster and I start to wonder if eventually Johnson's role, as much as Casey likes defense and needs the rebounding, if eventually he's going to be more valuable on the market than he is for this team.
Yeah, for sure. I think something's going to have to give at some point. There's too much of a crowd. I think you're going to see Aaron Gray, the veteran, will, you know, as Valanciunas is learning, he'll see some minutes early on, and then after that, and he actually played decently beside Bargnani, and the rare times Bargnani was out there with Gray, because Gray was hurt at the beginning as well when Bargnani was doing well. But later on, they had a chance to play a little bit. I mean, so I think he'll get a chance early while Jonas is learning, and then but you might see his minutes drop off the earth later on in the season. And then you have Ed Davis and Amir needing time. They're both really fours. I think they're probably going to have to play Amir at the five out of position. Obviously, he can't guard the true seven-footers, the really big six centers, but he can do well against the long guys, and I think you'll see a lot of that early on. But at some point, yeah, they're going to have to make a call. They've put a ton of resources into developing Davis. The whole summer was built on reworking his jump shot, making him the main guy in summer league, and Obviously, he's on the rookie deal where Amir's making a lot of money. I know he's got a ton of backers in the organization because his advanced metrics are really solid. I mean, last year Amir slipped a fair bit, but 2 years ago he had a really strong season. So it's tough to figure out what they're going to do. There's obviously a logjam there. And at some point, yeah, I mean, it's hard to say what Amir's value would be with that contract. I mean, we have seen some crazy contracts this summer that make that one look almost like a good deal, though. So who knows? I mean, you never know. We've seen anybody can get traded. Gilbert Arenas has been traded. Rashard Lewis, many other guys with just insane deals. So anything's possible for sure.
Yeah, Johnson's a lot easier to move than those guys.
Yeah, no question.
Between Ed Davis and DeMar DeRozan, you know, who do you think the expectations are higher for, and who do you think is going to actually make a more significant jump?
Good question. DeRozan has the higher expectations on him. They sort of marketed around him, and he's shown enough flashes. I mean, Davis he hasn't had a lot of chance to show what he can do. DeMar's shown a lot more flashes. The consistency hasn't been there, but he's shown some moments, and there's been some stretches in his career where you've seen the potential that's there. So I think the expectations are him, especially because the team's going to have to make a call on him contract-wise after the year. I think they really need – if they're going to approach have a shot at going for eighth, they're going to need a lot of DeRozan. So I think the expectations will be a lot higher on him. He's got a lot to prove. Davis has got to prove that he's a rotation player. DeRozan has to prove that he's a good starter. So I think that's where the differences will lie with those two.
Is Jose Calderon still a Raptor when March rolls around?
I think they're going to try awfully hard to move him. I think that's a really nice combo. Jose's not the type that's going to rock the boat. He'll buy in to being the backup. He might not like it, but he's a pro. And there's not too many teams that have a Lowry Calderon backcourt, I think, a point guard rotation. I think a lot of it's going to depend on how the season goes, how close Toronto is. If they're playing really well, I think they'll keep the status quo. I'd say he's gone. If you want my opinion right now, I think he'll be gone at the trade deadline as long as they can get something of value, because he'll have value as a solid point guard and an expiring contract and everything. I think they're not going to have that many chances on the trade front to get better, so I think they'll try. Plus, I'm sure they promised John Lucas some minutes, so I think they're going to do their best. I know they've tried to move him, but nothing's come about. So I think they'll do their best and see what happens. But I'm going to say he's gone, but we'll find out.
Can Terrence Ross and DeMar DeRozan kind of work together if DeRozan is playing more in the small forward position and Ross is functioning more at the shooting guard? Is that really going to be the best fit if he winds up getting significant playing time?
Yeah, Ross is going to not to the same degree as Valanciunas because he's not a big and he's has more experience against more systems similar to the NBA. He played in a system, a pro style sort of thing at Washington. So I think he'll adjust pretty well. Whether he can coexist with DeRozan, I don't know. Neither of them can handle the ball at even an average NBA level. So, I mean, that's a major problem. Where he does complement DeRozan is he can really hit from outside, and obviously DeRozan can't. So that'll be a nice compliment. I'm just not sure if you're going to have enough creators on the floor if those two are on at the same time. You're going to need Lowry to do it. And Calderon doesn't really create for himself. So, I mean, if those two are together, you're going to need Lowry on the court with them and probably Bargnani as well. I mean, I'm not sure. I'm not sure there's not enough creativity with those two on the floor.
I guess we'll find out. Before I let you go, can you give me what you think is the grade for the Raptors offseason?
I'd say a solid B. They didn't get the star swingman they were swinging for, if you will, with a Calderon package, maybe with Amir and Ed Davis, maybe even DeRozan being thrown out there. I'm sure they would have loved to get a Rudy Gay or an Iguodala. That didn't happen, so that'll prevent them from getting an A. But they did add Lowry, and I'd say he's their best player by a fair bit. And whenever you can add your best player in the offseason, then you have to get a decent grade. So I think a B is fair.
Yeah, I think that sounds fair to me, too. That's Ryan Wolstad of the Toronto Sun. Ryan, thanks so much for your time. I really appreciate it.
No problem. Thanks for having me.
So there are clearly a lot of different ideas about the Landry decision and even the Lowry decision in terms of how it came about and what the end goal for this organization is. I want to get a real sense inside of the organization and really figure out what was going on behind closed doors. So I went to the best source I could find on that kind of things. One of the best beat writers in really that covers the NBA anywhere.
All right, join me on the CBSSports.com NBA podcast is Doug Smith of the Toronto Star, an absolute legend in the business. Doug, how are you?
Well, I'm not quite legendary, but I'm all right, thanks.
Let's go ahead and start here with the Raptors. You know, we've seen a lot of moves from them, and it was clear they wanted to make a big splash in the offseason. They missed out on Steve Nash. They do land Kyle Lowry, and they kind of tinker with some pieces here and there. In more of a general sense, what do you think the goal of this offseason was for the Raptors, and do you think they accomplished it?
Well, they needed to – well, they probably accomplished it. The one thing they needed was like a stud three, but then there's a bunch of teams that need that. They didn't get that at all. But they did upgrade at the point guard. They did get more depth at the 2-3, not spectacular depth, but, you know, Terrence Ross, Landry Fields, these guys are pretty good. They like Valanciunas coming. You know, it's the next step in a progression. Whether they're a playoff team, I would be surprised, but they are better now than they were at the end of last year.
You know, we look at the move for Lowry. What was the big key there that, you know, was it just that he was available and a top-tier point guard, so they kind of, you know, took advantage of the situation, or was he somebody that they specifically targeted because of a skill set?
They had targeted him about the middle of the year and had discussions with Houston back then. They liked the way he defends. They like the way he can get in the lane, and they like his toughness. He's got a bit of an edge to him that this team hasn't had for a very long time. Now, you know, he's an upgrade over Jared Bayless, who he's replacing, so there's that. But they like Lowry because they like his grit, and he sort of fits with what Dwayne Casey wants from his team, a guy who's got some toughness. And the connection with Alvin Williams, who's a scout here, the Philly connection, both went to Villanova. Alvin's been sort of tutoring Lowry since he got in the NBA. And that sort of connection, they like that kind of toughness, that kind of that Philly grit, that kind of thing they got. And they wanted him. You know, they pretty much were after him since, well, I would say February.
Wow, I wasn't aware of that. That's actually kind of interesting to know. So with Lowry, who do you think benefits the most from Lowry coming on board with the Raptors?
I think probably DeMar DeRozan, because he can probably get in the paint and get him the ball a little bit more. Like, you know, I'm not sure about Lowry's pick and roll skills. I don't think they're comparable to Jose Calderon, who's one of the best with Bargnani running pick and roll and pick and pop. But I think if Lowry can teach a bit of toughness to guys like DeRozan and even a guy like Amir Johnson, just by osmosis, just by seeing how he plays, those are the guys who are going to benefit. Ed Davis, too. You need guys to see toughness on your team so that they can emulate it and have it demanded of them. And I think Lowry's presence, more than anything, will help those three guys out.
You know, they've added Jonas Valanciunas, and that's obviously going to be a big pickup for them after the 2011 draft. You know, we saw a lot of not good things from him in the Lithuanian team, and I've kind of argued and seen other pieces argue the same, which is, well, it's kind of a different context. You got to kind of look at it within the framework of how he was playing. You know, is there any sort of concern that Valanciunas may not be as ready as maybe they thought he was?
I think there's a little bit of concern coming off the Olympics because he was pretty average, and he fully admitted it. Like, I don't think he was prepared to play against the best men in the world. You know, the Lithuanian league's pretty good, and he's, you know, 20 years old playing against grown-ups, but not the caliber of grown-ups he saw in the Olympics. And I think that sort of made him go, whoa. I asked him after the last Lithuania game, and he lost in the quarterfinals, what he learned, and he said the first thing he said was, "I learned not to foul out." So he knows that he's got some issues to deal with in the NBA. You know, he's going to be a very good player. I don't have any doubt about that. And I'm hearing that from people entirely disassociated from the Raptors who know European basketball, that they're very high on his skill set and his abilities, but you know, the NBA, it's full of grown-ups, and he's going to take some lumps early in the year. And I think the Raptors at the end of last year were sort of tempering the expectations a little, saying, you know, look, this kid's not a savior. He's a very good player, but he's also a 20-year-old big man who's going to have to learn the game.
Eventually, do you see any sort of long-term concern with Valanciunas and Bargnani sharing the floor? Are they going to complement each other pretty well if both reach, not even their ceiling, but an acceptable level of progression?
I think they do complement each other. I think Valanciunas, when he grows into his body, is more of a low post kind of back of the basket guy once he learns that. And I think that might even create more space for Bargnani, who is, I think, has an allergy to paint. So he can stand outside and shoot those 20-footers, which he's very good at, and sort of stretch defenses that way. It's going to be, you know, I think there'll be some rebounding deficiencies at the start because Valanciunas, I'm sure, will get pushed around a little bit, and Bargnani is just simply not a good rebounder. But I do think eventually when they learn how to play with each other and Casey gets teaching them, that they could be quite complementary. They're big. Like, they're both legit 7-footers, and Bargnani is, you know, the prototypical stretch 4. And whether Valanciunas becomes a guy, a back-to-the-basket guy, really effective, that's going to be job one for the Raptors.
Bargnani's rebound rate ticked up early before the injury, and it fell off a cliff when he came back. I don't think anybody really thought that he was healthy when he returned. You know, has he bought in your opinion, to what Dwayne Casey's trying to do there?
He did at the start of last year before he got hurt. It was like somebody had occupied his body that we hadn't seen before, because he did buy in. He was very active, impacting the ball on a high screen roll. He was getting back to cover space in the paint when after that he was doing things that normal NBAers do as a matter of course, but I think Dwayne demanded it of him, and he finally bought in. It took him a long time, and again, like you said, when he came back, he was bad old Andrea. But I agree, he wasn't particularly healthy and played a little bit scared, didn't want to get hurt again. But given a full training camp and a full preseason, I don't think he'll ever be a 8-rebound-a-night guy. But if he could be 6.5, it's going to help them a lot.
How much do you think the Steve Nash being available at the start of free agency had to do with the offer sheet extended to Landry Fields?
Quite a bit. They knew that Fields would be a key part of any sign and trade with Phoenix if the Knicks wanted to do it. You know, they like Fields. I think they probably overpaid, but, you know, most teams overpay for free agents, especially guys who are sort of marginal, middle-of-the-pack kind of, middle-of-the-rotation guys. But it was a preemptive strike, and they were, you know, not entirely overjoyed at making the offer, but they knew they had to do it and are quite happy. You know, if it doesn't work in the third year of the deal, they're all going to get fired anyway. It's going to be somebody else's problem. So you make the offer to sort of preempt the Suns-Knicks thing, and then you get a player you think is serviceable. Now, you know, Fields had a great rookie year, as we all know, and a horrible second year. Whether that was system-related, you know, they did a lot of extensive analytics on that first year and thought he would be a good fit with this team far more than he was with the Carmelo Anthony team in that second year. So, you know, maybe they get something, but, you know, they overpaid, sure, but they needed to do that to have a shot at Nash.
Is Terrence Ross going to be able to fill in the kind of need that he needs? Do they really project him as being able to be the kind of guy that comes in and is an explosive wing, or is it more of a, well, he can fill a need for us?
He can fill a need. He's a shooter, a very good shooter, a very very aggressive defender, they tell me. I wasn't at Summer League, but Dwayne Casey told me after that they were really surprised at his ability and willingness to defend, which is something, you know, I've been saying all along that DeMar DeRozan is a far better athlete than he is a basketball player right now. And I think Ross is probably a far better basketball player than he is an athlete right now. And you want basketball players. And I think that's going to be interesting competition, Ross and DeRozan, because they're quite similar in stature, quite similar in skill sets, but I think at the end of the day, Ross is probably a better basketball player and less of an athlete.
That's interesting, and it's good to hear. I think that's what Casey will excel with is those kind of players. So last question for you. If you had to grade the Toronto Raptors offseason, what do you think you would give it?
I'd probably give it a B-. They didn't get the big three, breakdown three that can break his guy off the dribble and score. But they're better at point guard, they're deeper on the wing, and, you know, the Valanciunas was a bonus anyway. And, you know, they still have a chip to play. They still have the Calderon expiring contract that's $10.3 million that they could play anytime before February and maybe add somebody that way. Like, that's – so they're not there yet, but they took some big strides, I think, this summer. I would say B+, C plus, B-.
Nice. I got one. I want to slide one more in on you. What does Ed Davis really have to work on in the offseason?
His shot. It's broken. Yeah. It's not flat out broken. And I hope he's doing it. I didn't see him in summer league. That, you know, he's got to learn to get a jump shot that's at least effective to 10 feet, and he has to get physically bigger. He got pushed around again, but, you know, he's got to spend a lot of time in the weight room. You know, that's an interesting piece, Ed Davis, because he's got some skills, great instincts. Great off the ball instincts, but he's not physically strong enough yet, and he's not offensively polished yet.
I guess we'll have to see how he progresses. That's Doug Smith of the Toronto Star. Make sure to check out his work. It's absolutely fantastic. He's such a great writer. Doug, thanks so much for your time.
No problem, Matt. Appreciate it.
All right, well, we've seen what the media has to say about this situation. What do the fans think? I went to one of the best bloggers out there for a great site on the True Hoop Network to get some answers as to how Raptors fans are dealing with the up-and-down offseason of the Raptors.
All right, joining me now on the CBSSports.com NBA podcast is Sam Holiku of RaptorsRepublic.com. Absolutely great site on the True Hoop Network. They've always got a lot of different things on the blog, and that's really key. I think when you're running a great blog is you want a lot of different content, something we try and do here on EOB. Sam, let's start off by talking about kind of Raptors fans' reaction to this offseason in general, and then we'll break down the kind of specific moves. You know, they go from giving Landry Fields $20 million to snagging Kyle Lowry in a trade. You know, was there kind of a whiplash effect for Raptors fans between freaking out in a bad way and then freaking out in a good way?
Well, there was freaking out from all angles from the beginning of summer. Obviously, the Landry Fields signing was an attempt to hamstring the Knicks into not being able to get Steve Nash, which didn't work out. And on that, like, they were basically, fans were down the middle on, you know, do we want to pay a 37-year-old Steve Nash $36 million over 3 years? Or do we want to rebuild? And so, you know, we got stuck with Landry. People were hoping the Knicks would have matched that offer, but they didn't. And, you know, we got Landry, probably paid him, oh, we overpaid him a couple mil a year. I mean, he's still a pretty good player. He won me a fantasy pool a couple years ago, so I'm a fan of his. Anyway, so, you know, people were kind of torn on that. We recognize that they overpaid, but, you know, got a good guy at least. And then, you know, we go and we grab Lowry in the Rockets fire sale for, you know, basically nothing, like a first round pick conditional, and Gary Forbes, who hasn't done much in Toronto in the last season. So people are pretty happy about that. And we got our starting point guard for the future, and it looks like Calderon's on his way out.
You know, when we look at the Lowry deal, were you surprised that they were able to swing a move that big?
Very surprised. It kind of made me nervous because, you know, a lot of us hold Morey in high regard. So he gave up Lowry for, you know, a marginal player and a conditional first rounder. So, you know, that first of all was like a red flag for me. Like, why is he giving him up so much? And obviously they were trying to, you know, clear room to get Dwight, but you know, when you look at the trade, it's a great trade. He's a great player, Lowry. He's coming from a system that helped him playing under McHale. But with all the questions around Calderon and his position on the team going forward, it's nice to have, you know, the point guard position solidified for at least, you know, the next few years.
How much are Raptors fans concerned with what they saw from Jonas Valanciunas in the Olympics?
So that's a tough question. I mean, he dominated last year in the under 19. He's definitely a beast, but, you know, you're playing with men at this point. So, you know, he's still young. He's still 19 years old. And you could ask the question, like, we didn't see a whole lot from Davis on the American side. You know, it would have been nice to see him go out and do a little bit more than what he did. But you're playing with the absolute best of the best in the world. And, I mean, it wasn't terrible. It wasn't a terrible showing. I don't know. I'm not too concerned, but again, it would have been nice to see a little more out of him.
You know, when you look at the drafting of Terrence Ross, it obviously filled a big need. Did you consider that a reach at the time? I certainly did, but I want to get your thoughts on it from what the Raptors needed.
Yeah, it was definitely a reach. The kid's a good shooter. The last few drafts, Colangelo has been like, you know, we scratched our heads with some of the decisions he made. I mean, Jonas, until now, seems to have been a good decision. But Ross is a nice player. He's athletic. He shoots well. The Raptors need some help with shooting. So, I mean, he fills a need. And also, something that not a lot of people are talking about is, you know, DeRozan's coming up for a new contract soon. And he may or may not stay. So they need to, you know, do some succession planning and have a guy who can take over the, you know, shooting guard role, and if he doesn't stay. So it wasn't terrible.
Are you pro? Are you for or against trading Jose Calderon at the deadline?
Well, I mean, depends what you get, right? Like, if we can get a first rounder out of for him, you know, I'm all for it. I don't know. I don't know what the value for him is, right? Like, you could say that Kyle Lowry might be a little bit better than Calderon at this point, and all Houston got from him was like a conditional first rounder and a guy who's, you know, who's 13th man on your bench. You know, he's coming off the books this year, so that's about $10 million of cap space. You know, I wouldn't trade him for another player. I definitely wouldn't trade him for a contract. But if you can get like a, you know, a first rounder or a, you know, early second round pick out of him, I'd be okay with that.
Our Raptors fans, where do they stand? And you can kind of separate yourself out in terms of where they stand with Brian Colangelo. There's a lot of frustration, particularly when he got his extension. And then last year, the move to get Dwayne Casey really worked out, and they took a step forward. Bargnani seemed to respond. They took a step forward as an organization, and this kind of year kind of leans towards that, even with the Fields signing. Fields is a good player, like you said, and they brought on Lowry. What's the general perception towards management right now?
Well, it's, you know, some people love him, some people hate him, right? I think he's done an okay job. He's done an average to good job, I think. He's made some good moves, and he's made some really bad ones. You know, hiring Stefanski is kind of a sketchy personnel decision, but then he goes and he grabs a Casey who, you know, he's exactly the kind of coach that, you know, Raptors fans look for, especially with, you know, Toronto mentality on hard work and, we like our defense in Toronto, right? So, you know, we haven't seen a lot of that ever. And that worked out. So, I mean, you know, I'm not a big fan of his personally. But, you know, it's just philosophy, right? Like he's made some good moves and he made some bad moves. And I think that's where a lot of people are. They're squarely on one side of the spectrum or the other. Like they either really like him or they really hate him for the most part.
If you're going to give a grade to this offseason, what would you give him?
B minus. Like, I mean, they're not really players in a lot of respects in terms of, you know, we didn't have a lot of cap space. We didn't have a lot of assets that were movable. The real movable assets are guys like, you know, Bargnani, say what you like about him. And you wrote a great piece about him yesterday in his post defense. But, you know, you got a young guy who's 26, who's going into his prime, who could drop 20 a night for $10 million a year, considering what other people in the league have been paid recently. And that's pretty good. You know, the first rounder would have been more of an asset until they drafted Ross. So, I mean, there wasn't a whole lot the Raptors could have done. We kept our guys in place. We kind of – the best move was for me was, you know, getting rid of Bayless, who's a supremely frustrating player. Yeah. It was about average Raptor offseason.
Sounds good. Sounds good. That's Sam from RaptorsRepublic.com. You can check out his work. You can follow him on Twitter at RapsFan. Great follow. You know, real in-depth analysis on multiple levels. They cover the team really comprehensively, and it's a great site. Sam, thanks so much for your time.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
All right, that'll wrap it up for the CBSSports.com NBA podcast. This has been the Raptors offseason review. Hope you guys enjoyed it. Wish you would check us out on Facebook. Make sure to like us on Facebook. Check us out on Twitter. We're at Ion Basketball. Make sure you can check us out on iTunes and subscribe there. That helps us out a lot. And let us know what you think in the comments. Until next time, thanks so much for listening. This has been the CBSSports.com NBA podcast.